good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. Very weird this morning. It's Kathy's turn to take Molly to preschool, so that meant I got to sleep in. And about 9:15, I finally felt guilty enough to actually sit up in bed and reach over and get the clicker and turn on the television, which is usually a mistake. I usually try to go to Sirius satellite radio music and listen to some classic music, but you know, this is the anniversary today of September 11th, 2001. So I turned on MSNBC, and I'll be damned if they weren't just rebroadcasting exactly their broadcast from 6 years ago on September 11th, 2001, which also happened to be, I heard later, a Tuesday, like today. And it was just so eerie and unnerving to watch that being broadcast and reported on as though it were in real time. And knowing what I and you and most Americans know about what has transpired since that attack. It was damn near an out-of-body experience. I swear, maybe it's because I had just woken up and still wasn't completely conscious. It takes me a while to wake up in the morning, and I'm watching this, and it's almost like I felt as though I were in a parallel dimension looking back, or not looking back, looking across some sort of time-space continuum or 6 or 12, looking at actual events unfolding in their immediacy. Now, okay, that's weird, but you all know I'm, you know, kind of crazed anyway. But that's how the day started. And when I watched until the point where the NBC commentator, I guess it was Brian Williams, I'm not sure, when they switched to the Pentagon, and they said there has been an explosion at the Pentagon. And then whoever the correspondent was taking phone calls from people in the Pentagon. There was no camera crew there. And they were talking about an explosion, and people were being escorted out, running, you know, get out, get out, get out. And of course, no mention in the immediacy of that event of a plane or a plane crash, and which is not unusual. You know, in a catastrophic event like that, no one knows what has happened. But watching and listening to this stuff today and realizing where we are and what the Bush crime family has done to us in the 6 years since that attack, it was almost more than I could accept, you know, intellectually, emotionally. When I realize what Bush has done to our Constitution, to our sense of security, how these rat bastards have elevated fear to a primary component in our political system now, if not the primary component. The wars, the death, the destruction, the wounded and injured American servicemen, the destruction of our military, the violence we have perpetrated on the rest of the world, Abu Ghraib, torture, Guantanamo, gulags established by the CIA, on and on and on. And if we are to believe the real story put out by the Bush crime family, if we are to accept that as a real story, then other than the original 19 hijackers, all of whom supposedly perished, except the 5 or 6 who keep popping up in different places around the planet saying, no, I'm not dead. But if we accept the official story, and all 19 hijackers, 15 of whom were Saudis, none of whom were from Iraq or Afghanistan, If we accept that official story, then we have got to also accept this. Not a single person has been brought to justice in a courtroom charged with this crime against the United States. And not only that, but the incompetent thugs, miscreants, and morons who have worked within the Bush administration on that day and since that day, if you take a look at what has happened to them in their incompetency, in their inability to govern or protect or defend or do anything, what you see is a train wreck that's still occurring. And then on top of everything else, to listen to this testimony today from Petraeus and Crocker, and what a difference a day makes. The Senate hearings with these two clowns, vastly different from yesterday's hearings in front of this degenerate, useless U.S. House of Representatives. The senators actually asked pertinent questions. And Crocker and Petraeus had to admit that 5 years into this illegal occupation, they, Petraeus and Crocker, don't know if America is safer due to the invasion and the occupation. They don't know if the surge is working. They don't know what political progress is being made in Iraq. They don't know when troops could come home. On and on and on. And then this psychopathic rat bastard in the White House, George Bush, announcing that, well, he agrees with Petraeus and Crocker that it's time to cut some troops. So, tomorrow night, Chucklenuts is going to address the American public with more of his filthy lies. This time it'll be, well, next spring, or is it summer? We will cut our forces by 30,000. The same 30,000 that were just sent. We'll have some of that audio for you tonight from the hearings. And of course, since it is the sixth anniversary of September 11th and the attack on this country, we'll have some conversation on that tragic day as well. Not a whole lot. I can't discuss the events of 9/11. I don't want to peel the onion on the program about the what may be the real facts as opposed to the contrived facts of that day. We've talked about it a lot of times, and I just don't want to get into it tonight. I really don't. I just don't. Not, this program is not designed for that. There are conferences. There are websites. There are convocations. There are experts who can tell you that the official story of September 11th is an absolute lie. So we will focus a bit on it tonight, and then at the end of the program this evening, just a less than a minute, I guess, tribute to the people who died and the people who are going to continue to die because of what they were exposed to at Ground Zero after the buildings came down. People who are going to continue to die because the Bush crime family instructed Christy Todd Whitman, a former governor of New Jersey, right across the river, to cook the books at the EPA and announce that the air was safe so that Lower Manhattan could open up again and Wall Street could start cranking. And hundreds, if not thousands of people, children, old people, middle-aged people, teenagers, are now condemned to death by not being able to breathe because of this rotten bastard in the White House.
Cause America's been took, it's plain to see. The oldest trick in the book is making enemy. A phony evil, so the government can do its dirt and take away your freedom, lock and load, beat and search. Oil, blood, money make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being ass crossed, take away your rights to freedom. Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major.
What would you do if you
our nation was horrified, but it's not going to be terrorized. We will, we're a great nation. We're a nation of resolve. We're a nation that can't be cowed by evildoers.
About 22 past the hour. We now have 800 more, approximately 800 more Americans dead as a result of Bush's occupation of Iraq than the number of people killed on September 11, 2001, not all of whom were Americans, of course. And according to Bush and the Bush crime family, the actual people who perpetrated this, organized it, designed it, and perpetrated it, are still on the loose. Oh, don't even talk to me about Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, this John Belushi lookalike that was captured about 3 years ago. Don't even want to go there. So today, across the country, people bob their heads to mark the moments when these planes crash in World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and that field in Pennsylvania. The firefighters and the first responders who helped rescue thousands that day and later recovered the dead were to read the names, did read the victims' names for the first time. Many of those rescuers are now ill with respiratory problems and cancer themselves because of the lies that were told to them by Christy Todd Whitman, who I guess figures she's off the hook because a couple of years later she resigned. The people that are suffering with those respiratory diseases and cancers blame the illnesses on exposure to the toxic dust that was kicked up by the collapse of the towers when they were deliberately brought down. And for the first time, on this commemoration of that horrible day, the name of a victim who survived the tower's collapse but died 5 months later of lung disease, blamed on the death she inhaled, was added to the official roll today. If the names of the dead 5 years from now are included in the roll call, it's going to be astonishing. And the man who managed the FEMA response to Katrina, our Homeland Security Secretary, Michael of the Devil Chertoff, also spoke to the mourners in Pennsylvania, telling them, quote, "You have my promise that we will continue to work every single day to protect the people of this country, all in the name of those who publish or who perish heroically on Flight 93. Continue to work every single day to protect the people of this country, as he did in the aftermath of Katrina, as he, as part of the Bush crime family, was involved, or if nothing else, as an observer to what happened on September 11, 2001. So this cadaverous thug stands there and tells the people in Pennsylvania another lie. Firefighters who shared the platform in New York with former Mayor Giuliani, said he shouldn't speak at the service. for a number of reasons, not the least of which is Giuliani has taken the events of September 11th, 2001 and totally politicized them. It's all about him. It's all about him. After he went down to the Trade Center site, according to the Associated Press, one man yelled, "Scum, scum," at him. And a woman from the family lineup, people waiting to get down, said Giuliani didn't allow enough time for the search for victims' remains. She said, quote, "Because of Giuliani, we never had closure," end quote. Giuliani left without speaking to reporters, but Whately appears next on the campaign trail. Oh, he'll speak to him. He'll speak to him. And then this moronic national intelligence director we have now, Mike McConnell, says U.S. authorities remain vigilant and concerned about sleeper cells, would-be terrorists inside the United States. But then he says, quote, "We're safer, but we're not safe," end quote. We're safer than when? You jackass, did we have sleeper cells of would-be terrorists inside the U.S.? 5 years ago? 10 years ago? How about 6 years ago? How about on September 11th, 2001? Was that a sleeper cell? Is that what that was? And we're safer now? In all, 2,974 victims were killed by those attacks. 2,750 connected to the World Trade Center, 40 in Pennsylvania, 184 at the Pentagon, and those numbers do not include the 19 hijackers. They're coming to America. They're coming to America. They're coming to America.
And we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Our country is strong. None of us will ever forget this day. Yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just. My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty.
And this is a new kind of evil, and we understand, and the American people are beginning to understand. This crusade, this war on terrorism, is going to take a while.
Twenty-five before the hour, Mary in Myrtle Beach says, didn't Zacharias Moussaoui stand trial for the 9/11 fiasco? Yeah, he did. He was arrested by the FBI while taking pilot training in Minnesota, and he was still in custody when Al-Qaeda hijackers attacked on September 11th. I wonder about the Moussaoui capture trial and sentencing, Mary. I believe he is serving life without parole in one of our supermax prisons, but I believe this was after considerable amount and very lengthy torture. So I guess technically, one person who was involved in the assignment, he claimed that Bin Laden assigned him the role of flying with or piloting one of the planes into a building in the United States, but. That's what he said. Who knows? And this is from John in New York City. Hey, Mike, whatever happened to the hundreds of millions of tons of concrete, steel, body parts, computers, paper, plastic, glass? Who purchased it? For how much? As the world grieved, who would conceive of such a ghoulish deal? Where are the receipts for this hideous transaction? Who was the buyer? Who is the seller? Why was the crime of the century not ever inspected at the molecular level by an organized team of thousands of PhD forensic scientists? Wasn't anybody in our government curious enough to figure out how 19 Wahhabist morons literally flew under our military's radar to pull off the crime of the century? Who called off NORAD and why? I wonder how that lisping, buck-toothed rodent Giuliani observed this sixth anniversary of murderous negligence. Did the mayor of Honolulu ever financially exploit the Pearl Harbor attack? How many convictions under the Patriot Act? Still zero? And it's the sixth anniversary of the reading of My Pet Goat. Will we ever find out, John writes? No, we will not. There are certain things you can rest assured. There are too many vested interests in this country, just as there were in the assassination of Jack Kennedy. Oh, I know. No. The official story is the official story. Now, as the night progresses, we definitely will, if you want to mention the 9/11 commemoration or anything about that, that's fine. I'm going to ask you tonight not to get into lengthy expositions about why you're convinced that it was an inside job. So am I, you know, and so are a lot of people, not all, certainly, maybe not even a majority, but a lot of people who listen to this program are convinced it's an inside job. Now, by that, either the Bush crime family allowed it to happen, or the Bush crime family made it happen, or the Bush crime family didn't give a tinker's damn one way or the other. But let's, I just don't want to get into a 9/11 conspiracy discussion tonight, because I'm convinced there was one. Utterly, absolutely. You don't have to try to convince me. Rumsfeld was interviewed by GQ magazine, and he says he has no regrets on the war with Afghanistan. This is a quote from the article. Look at Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, 28 million people are free. They have their own president. They have their own parliament. Improved a lot on the streets. This has been a big success. End quote. A big success, Afghanistan. In reality, the country has been abandoned in the war on terrorism to the extent that the 30-some thousand troops we have there and the handful of NATO troops are now facing a Taliban that has regrouped, resolidified its control over about 90% of the country. Oh, I know. We get reports from the military commanders of the various nations operating in Afghanistan, the coalition forces that are rosy. But the truth is, other than Kabul, the country is owned by the warlords, the gangsters, the Taliban, just like it always has been. The president there, Hamid Karzai, recently said that security in his country had definitely deteriorated. That's a very diplomatic understatement. At least 20 Afghans were killed in two suicide bombings within the last 24 hours. Such attacks are on the rise. The Taliban carrying out 103 suicide bombings in Afghanistan in the first 8 months of 2007, which is a 70% increase over the same period last year. And for a second year in a row, Afghanistan produced record levels of opium, led by a staggering 45% increase in the Taliban stronghold of Helmand Province. Now, remember, when the Taliban first came to power, they outlawed opium and almost eradicated it. But they understand how the wheels of war work. They turn in tandem with the wheels of global commerce. And you got to have something. If you're not producing weapons, then you better be producing drugs, or at least dope. From Jody in Arlington Heights writes, "Hi, Mike, just got back from a trip to the fabric store where I was buying copious amounts of fabric. The fabric is for a sewing project I'm leading at my church to make specialized pants for returning service people whose legs have been blown off. A woman whose son was killed in Iraq got me started on it. Anyway, as I was checking out, one of the checkers asked me why I was buying so much fabric. After I explained what she was doing, or after I explained what we were doing, she asked, Is there a great demand for those kinds of pants? I wanted to scream at her, "What do you think? Wake up." But instead I told her calmly, "Yes," and that the closet in the hospital was empty. Mike, I was so saddened. I know the public has been hoodwinked, but I thought at least they would know the cost to those fighting there. Apparently, they don't even know that. And, of course, that is how the Bushes want it. I hope my encounter with her will open her eyes, but we won't get anywhere educating one person at a time. Sometimes I just don't know what to do. Jody in Arlington Heights. And on the other hand, we can't blame the clerk, can we, Jody? She is deliberately kept in the dark by her government, her media. Anyone she comes in contact with are equally kept in the dark. So there's no conversation on the back fence or in the church basement or at the civic club meeting or at the PTA. We just don't talk about it. All right, we want to play some of the sound for you now from today's hearing. Unlike yesterday's snooze fest, today's Senate hearings were both more revealing and a tad more spirited, and they forced Petraeus and Crocker to come to terms with some actual questions from the Senate. We'll start with Petraeus from his opening remarks explaining his recommendation for a drawdown of the troops. You know, the 30,000 little joke, the trick that's being played on everyone. Now, take note, he is only talking about reducing the number of surge troops, the ones that we just sent. So he's just talking about when the surge forces will start to come home. But listen carefully. He says he cannot make any decision about when all the other troops can start coming home. Why, of course not. And given the fact that there has been virtually no political progress in Iraq, it's just gone backwards, which Chucklenuts himself said was necessary to completing the mission. Sure sounds like the surge itself was worse than totally useless.
I have recommended a drawdown of the surge forces from Iraq. In fact, later this month, the Marine Expeditionary Unit deployed as part of the surge will depart Iraq. Beyond that, if my recommendations are approved, this will be followed by the withdrawal of a brigade combat team without replacement in mid-December, and the further redeployment without replacement of four other brigade combat teams and the two surge Marine battalions in the first 7 months of 2008.
Oh, good.
Until we reach the pre-surge level of 15 brigade combat teams by mid-July 2008. Force reductions will continue beyond the pre-surge levels of brigade combat teams that we will reach by mid-July 2008. In my professional judgment, however, it would be premature to make recommendations on the pace of such reductions at this time. In fact, our experience in Iraq has repeatedly shown that projecting too far into the future is not just difficult, it can be misleading and even hazardous.
So the death, what the man is saying is this. If your family member is in Iraq or is going to go to Iraq or has recently joined the military, the chances are, whatever they are, that your family member will be dead soon as a result of this kind of insanity. Well, maybe by next July, that's next year, maybe then we'll start to draw down those surge troops. But, you know, for me to say anything beyond that, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, is, off the table. It's going to be a long time, ladies and gentlemen. Get used to it. This is the first war of the 21st century, don't you know?
For me and you. George W. Bush will give our country a push and put us back on the road to what's right and true. George W. Bush will give our country a push. He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. Now Republicans.
My administration has a job to do, and we're going to do it. We will rid the world of the evildoers.
T. 10 before the hour, Senator John Warner, who is retiring after this particular Congress, asked General Petraeus whether or not the war in Iraq has made America safer.
Are you able to say at this time, if we continue what you have laid before the Congress here as a strategy, do you feel that that is making America safer?
Sir, I believe that this is indeed the best course of action to achieve our objectives in Iraq.
Answer the question.
Does that make America safer?
Sir, I don't know, actually. I have not sat down and sorted out in my own mind. What I have focused on and been riveted on is how to accomplish the mission.
And the mission, though, isn't it, General Petraeus, predicated on we have to stop them there, or else we'll have to stop them in the streets of Hoboken and Columbus? Oh, my God. And then the ancient and totally gone Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia asked a simple question. Why should Congress in America keep giving the Bush crime family more time and more bodies in Iraq if there is no meaningful progress being made there? And specifically, in the Iraqi government's inability to take over the governance of the country. The toy ambassador to Iraq answered this one.
You've talked about military success, but by the president's own reckoning, that success is meaningless without political reconciliation. Are 6 months or 12 months really going to make a difference on the big questions? Why should we keep giving you more and more time? Why? Why should we keep giving you more and more time?
The answer I would give is that we are seeing some encouraging signs out there, both at the provincial level, at the federal level, and between the two. I don't want to overstate what's going on, but I think it is certainly something that is encouraging me.
He sounds more senile than Byrd does. What does that answer mean? What do the answers from these two clowns translate to? Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. After 2 days of this bat squeeze, and their appearance on Fox Noise Channel last night, what is the bottom line from these two clowns? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And then old war hawk John McCain asks Ambassador Crocker, what is your level of confidence that the Maliki government could get its act together sufficiently to meet the benchmarks necessary to end the war? Benchmarks to end a war! Can you believe this garbage? There are no benchmarks to end a war, you dumb bastard! Do you know how you end a war? You render the enemy incapable of picking up a gun. You blow up all of his buildings. You destroy everything in his country. You kill all of his allies. You butcher his women and children. You set fire to his farms. You level his buildings. You don't have benchmarks. Benchmarks! That's what you have when you're launching a new company. My God, benchmarks to end the war. Typically, Crocker gave a glib answer about having his confidence under control. So if there's no confidence in Maliki, why are we there? Why are we sending more troops into that meat grinder?
Ambassador Crocker, what is your degree of confidence that the Maliki government will begin to do the things that we've been asking them to do for a long time?
My level of confidence is under control.
Oh, well, that's good. That's really good, Crocker, you half-witted freak. Your level of confidence is under control. Son of a bitch, well, thank you for that! Now let's send more American soldiers and Marines into this killing machine. Right, Ryan? His level of confidence is under control. I'll be damned. It's just astonishing. But that's what these two sucker clowns, these two killer painted bulbous-nosed freaks are supposed to do. Sit there in their clown outfits with the row of clowns behind them and prattle on without making a lick of sense. Nothing. Benchmarks. Working with a puppet government. No oil being produced. No water being pumped. No electricity coming on. Nothing. Car bombs, death, destruction. Hey, but we're making progress. Hey, we are approaching the finite level of transitional operatives wherein the categories that you senators are questioning us about will certainly come to fruition in the sense that the drawdown will occur when we have those three regiments moved south of Anbar and a little bit north of the moon. But I'll tell you what, we're keeping an eye on things, and as far as the Maliki government is concerned, we realize that any kind of compromise with that government leads to what is necessary in order to make... You see what I'm saying? Complete madness. This is... Kurt Vonnegut couldn't write about this. Mark Morford couldn't parody this. But you and I are supposed to believe it. We're supposed to gather, gain something from either listening to this today or listening to snippets or watching the evening news and saying, oh, yeah, okay, well, then, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. By the way, if you want to take a good look at Rumsfeld's success in Afghanistan, this weekend on CNN, Lifting the Veil, about, I think it's on both Saturday and Sunday, and it's about what women have to deal with in this liberated Afghanistan, where Rumsfeld, in his insanity, continues to claim that 28 million Afghans live in peace and freedom and harmony. Jesus, God, these people are just so vile. These Bush people. That's this weekend on CNN, Lifting the Veil. All right, we have a couple more, and then we're going to come to your calls. A couple more sound bites from the testimony today in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Questions asked of Ambassador Ryan Crocker and the apple polishing clown David Petraeus, General David Petraeus. Senator Jack Reed then asked Petraeus when there would be a troop drawdown beyond just bringing home the troops Bush surged into Iraq. Petraeus cannot say.
How long and at what maximum strength do you anticipate American forces being in Iraq?
Well, what I can see so far with any clarity in terms of time, as I said, is to the mid-July figure of 15 brigade combat teams.
We have the concepts to take us beyond that. But as I mentioned in my testimony, I can't with any confidence or clarity then project beyond that time other than to say that we will draw down. What I cannot say is the pace of the drawdown beyond that 15 brigade combat team structure.
Oh, okay. Republican Senator Susan Collins asked Petraeus how long we should continue sending in troops if there's no progress on the Iraq side. No stable government, no lights on, no water, sectarian violence continuing, car bombs, mass murder, ethnic cleansing. Okay, how long should we continue to send troops into that? Petraeus thought it was a good question. Talked about how hard he's going to have to think about that question. And about all our political interests in the region that extend beyond Iraq. Whatever that means. Wow! What an answer!
How long should we continue to commit American troops, American lives, American treasure, if the Iraqis fail to make political gains that everyone agrees is necessary to quell the sectarian violence?
Well, I would, if Senator, if we arrived at that point a year from now, that is something I would have to think very, very, very hard about. And that is my honest answer to you right now. That would be a very, very difficult recommendation to make at that point in time, because on the one hand we have very real national interests that extend beyond Iraq. They are true American national interests. On the other hand, there clearly are limits to the blood and treasure that we can expend in an effort.
Oh. Okay. This look. Let me pause for just a moment. This is madness. This is utter madness. There is a discussion going on, or there was yesterday and today, between the former branch of government that controlled the purse strings, that declared wars, that decided how the wars were going to be fought vis-a-vis what equipment would be bought, vis-a-vis what money would be appropriated. None of that exists anymore. This is war by fiat, Bush's fiat, or somebody's. It comes out of his punky mouth. But this is not a war. It's an occupation. But it's not an occupation because we're actively going out on patrols, the volunteer force and the mercenaries, seeking people to kill. This is insane. This is insane. Here sits a four-star general. Here sits the commander-in-chief of the forces in Iraq. Here sits numero uno soldier. Here he sits. And he can't give a straight answer about anything. You know why? Because it's not a war. This is George Bush's wet dream. This is Dick Cheney's fantasy. Go kill a few. All right, now come back. Now go kill a few more. Okay, I'll send you some more troops. Okay, go kill a few more. Oh, damn. Hey, keep going. Oh, back up. Okay, now let's go over there. Does anybody really want to, first of all, there's no mission. Why are we there? He tried to kill my dad. Okay. You had him hanged. Why are we there? What are we doing there? Nobody asks that question anymore. And the answers that come when the question is asked are nonsensical. They're insane. They make no sense at all. The mission keeps changing. And at least in Vietnam, we knew why we were there. To stop communism. Because if we don't, well, we'll be fighting them in the streets of San Diego. And the domino effect. Everything will fall. If we don't stop communism here in Vietnam, why are we in Iraq? Democracy. Okay, when do we invade Saudi Arabia? When do we start bombing Kuwait? When do we unleash the hounds of hell against Egypt? Those aren't democracies! This is madness. This is the madness of one psychopathic bastard, George W. Bush, who has the power to end this tomorrow, yesterday, 1,000 days ago. Never have gotten into it to begin with. Why are we there? You want to win the war? Give General David Petraeus everything he needs, short of nuclear weapons. Send 750,000 combat-ready soldiers into Iraq. Start on the southern border, the border with Saudi Arabia, and sweep north. Blow up everything in your path. Kill every single human being who gets in the way who is not in an American uniform. Swoop from the south to the north. When you get to Kurdistan, stop. Then turn around and go back and do it again and get the ones you missed on the first sweep through. Kill them all. Blow up the buildings that are left standing. And then the war's over and we've won. Yay! Senator Lindsey Graham asked Petraeus about troop levels and the future of the military. We could lose hundreds of troops through the surge. Could? No, Lindsey. R. Will. Lindsey Graham wants to know if it's worth it. Petraeus says it is.
So you're saying to the Congress that you know that at least 60 soldiers, airmen and Marines, are likely to be killed every month from now to July, that we're going to spend $9 billion a month of American taxpayer dollars, and when it's all said and done, we'll still have 100,000 people there. You believe it's worth it in terms of our national security interests to pay that price?
Sir, I wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't have made the recommendations that I have made if I did not believe that.
Uh-huh. Okay, America, contribute your sons and a few of your daughters and your husbands and a few of your wives. Your little children out there who have gotten used to seeing your daddy, kiss him goodbye. Some of you kids who have gotten used to having a mommy at home, even though she used to go to camp for 2 weeks every summer because she was in the National Guard, kiss her goodbye. Your mommy is going to be dead meat. 60 a month for the next 11 months. Gosh, that's over 600, isn't it? Dead Americans. And forget the money. The money doesn't mean anything. So General Petraeus sits there with all the chicken droppings on his chest and the line of clowns behind him. And he says to America, well, this is real important. Why are we there, General? This is real important. Well, why are we there, General? We need more death. Why are we there, General? This is real important. Why are we there, General? Why are we there, General? Why are we there, General?
We don't want your war. All stand together tall. We don't want your war. But you keep telling us we do. We don't want your war.
Administration has got a firm goal and a determination to achieve the goal, and that is to rally the world toward a campaign to find terrorists, to smoke them out of their holes, and to get them.
It's about 22 past the hour. Ayub Nouri is an Iraqi journalist residing in the United States. This is from rawstory.com. He told CNN yesterday that even when he was last in Baghdad in 2006, quote, the situation was very, very dangerous, unquote, but that things are much worse now. He writes, quote, when I speak to my friends and family these days on the phone, they tell me it is 100 times worse than when I was there. Even the regular people cannot leave their own neighborhoods. If you go to another neighborhood, that's completely unknown to you, and you might not be able to come home alive, end quote. When asked about General Petraeus' suggestion that Iraqi soldiers and police are very much in the fight, Ayub Nouri replied, quote, I think that's not true at all. I have to be honest with you and with everyone else in the world. When I was traveling around Iraq in Baghdad or anywhere else, I was afraid of the Iraqi army and the Iraqi police more than I was afraid of a militia or unknown men, end quote. And then Nuri said, quote, I personally do not have any faith or any hope in the Maliki government. The Iraqi government is neither willing nor are they able to do anything. But there sits Petraeus and there sits Crocker. Lying and spinning. Now, do you want to hear something scary? This is really scary, okay? This is from Flemington, New Jersey, today. A national study conducted among 302 self-reported Republicans, Democrats, and Independents revealed that General Petraeus' testimony yesterday had a significant impact on Americans' views of the military surge in Iraq. The research study was conducted by HCD Research and the Muhlenberg College Institute of Public Opinion during September 10th and 11th, yesterday and today, to obtain Americans' views on segments of the congressional testimony by General David Petraeus. While viewing video segments of the testimony, participants indicated their levels of believability by moving their mouse from left to right on a continuum. The responses were recorded in quarter-second intervals and reported in the form of curves. Participants were asked pre- and post-viewing questions. Among the findings, prior to viewing the video segments of the general's testimony, 26% of all responders indicated that the military objectives of the surge were met, while 56% reported that the objectives were not met. After viewing his testimony, 40% of all responders reported that the military objectives were met. It went up 14%. And 46% reported that the military objectives were not met. It went down 10%. Another finding. Among political affiliation, prior to viewing the general's testimony, 17% of Democrats reported that the military objectives were met. 17%. And 71% of Democrats reported that they were not met, compared to 40% of Republicans who said the objectives were met and 42% who said they were not met. Among the independents, 21% reported that the objectives were met and 55% indicated they were not met. But after viewing Petraeus' testimony, not 17% of Democrats, but 25% of Democrats reported that the military objectives were in fact met. And not 71% say they were not met, but it fell to 65%. Republicans, not 40% saying the objectives were met, but 61% said they were met after the testimony. Among independents, not 21% reporting that the objectives were met, but 34%. So Petraeus sits there and lies through his teeth and talks gibberish and garbage and nonsense. And even Democrats come away with an increase in the number who say, oh, well, okay, I didn't know that. Good, then they're being met. Now, if you want to see this, MediaCurves.com. MediaCurves.com, like a curve. MediaCurves.com. My God. All the numbers changed. And they improved from the position of the Bush crime family in Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. More people believed, in all three groups, believed the surge was doing what it's supposed to do after viewing Petraeus than before. And fewer people believed it's failing after viewing Petraeus than before. Astonishing. Talk about vaulting the propaganda. Oh my God.
now, keep it low brow, get stupid, cause I know how, check my brain in, be an idiot, act lonely, stay ignorant, be remedial, wear the best cap, slouch open, droop like a hunchback, don't discuss things, shout the last word, put your percent out the pasture, drop your IQ, that's what I do, my advice to girls and guys who wanna be a Nobel Prize finalist, rocket scientists, try applying this, keep the customers coming around.
They used to put out there in the Old West a wanted poster. It said, wanted dead or alive. All I want, America wants him brought to justice.
Yeah, but he's going in for another adjustment of his pacemaker next week or something. While Petraeus talked the other day, we mentioned this, but let me just give you this this update, and then we're going to come to your phone calls. At least 77 Iraqis were killed and 132 wounded during the latest violence. 13 GIs were killed and at least 16 injured in separate incidents, including a pair of vehicular bombings. 7 American soldiers were killed and 11 were wounded in a non-combat vehicular accident today. 2 detainees were also killed, a third was injured. East of Baghdad, another soldier was killed and 2 more were injured in a separate accident. Yesterday, a task force soldier was killed in a rocket attack in Ata Amin province. 3 U.S. soldiers were slightly wounded during a clash in Balad. The Department of Defense also announced the death of a GI in Balad during a small arms engagement on Saturday. It goes on. It goes on and on and on and on. You can get this at antiwar.com. You should stay in touch with that website, antiwar.com. Because they provide you with real information about the cost of this war. I know most of us don't want to know that. I don't want to know that. But that's what Bush and his Nazis count on. We don't want to know about it. All right, let's take some phone calls now, if you don't mind. Let's start with RB, who's calling from Saskatoon in Canada. RB, welcome to the program.
Good day. How are you?
I'm doing fine, RB.
Hey, I don't understand why none of those Democratic senators mentioned or alluded to the fact that it's pretty obvious that America is going to be having a permanent presence there, because a huge embassy that's been built, you can see from space.
Sure.
And the 5 permanent military bases that are being set up, concrete.
Well, I think there are 13 or 16 permanent.
Yeah. Well, and there was no mention of that. Like, wouldn't that have, like, Mr. Petraeus, in your expert opinion, why do we have 13 military bases, you know, permanent?
Yeah. Permanently staffed? Well, Republicans are death lovers, and Democrats are cowards. So those kinds of questions are not going to be asked.
Yes, and I was also pretty amazed at the incredible powers of Osama bin Goldstein. I mean, this guy is amazing. Apparently, when you grow a new kidney, it also helps you grow back the pigment in your beard. This guy, I don't know if he is the enemy of America. You guys are in trouble.
I guess so. He can regenerate body parts. And he has the amazing ability to flip from being animated in a video to being unanimated in a still photo, which is part of the video. It's just amazing the magical powers that Osama bin Laden has.
Well, I wish the American people would wake up. If Bill Gates can track down a mom who's doing some illegal file sharing, why can't the American military intelligence, in all its glory, with all its reach across even the Middle East, because it has working arrangements with the Saudi Arabian intelligence agency, the working room agency, even with the Syrian intelligence agency. In fact, they sent Mehud Arar, a Canadian citizen, to Syria to get them to torture a false confession out of him to say he was a member of this amorphous al-Qaeda group. Right. I mean, if they have all these great powers, why can't they find him? Well, we all know that because he's not supposed to be found. He is the Emmanuel Goldstein of our times.
That's true. That's true.
It gives us a good reason to keep hating those no-good-for-nothing Muslims, I'll tell you.
It does indeed. And the comparisons between the use of bin Laden's image and the videotape and the film of Emmanuel Goldstein in the novel 1984, the use of these two, the parallels are just astonishing. And I don't understand, RB, why Americans, every time we get another videotape from bin Laden, why we don't all just fall down in the street laughing and guffawing and slapping our knees and saying, Jesus, God, Orwell did this 70 years ago. I don't
quite. Well, you remember 3-4 years ago when they first started rolling out, and I would email you and tell you about this and stuff, and even Olbermann would once in a while talk about, you know, the nexus of politics and terror in his little deals, eh?
Right.
But even he would never dare to suggest that. Isn't it odd that these bin Laden videos always surface, and they're always, and they always go to military. The CIA always says, oh yeah, we believe it's him, and that's what they go with. And it benefits the right, of course. They just get the pile on, especially when they have this version of the bin Laden tape. They have him, you know, spouting left-wing causes, eh? I mean, isn't that perfect for the right?
He sounded like a Marxist economist the other day.
Yeah, which is kind of strange because if that is the bin Laden, he's a scion of a powerful corporate empire, for crying out loud, that basically own the country of Dubai, you know.
Yeah. Well, don't try to figure it out, RB. You'll wind up a gibbering maniac sitting alone in your bedroom naked talking to the walls.
Today I was down at the City Hall from 10 to 2 with Tinfoil Hat Lady, Beata, my friend.
Yeah.
And we held up signs saying 9/11 was an inside job and warning people about the North American Union and all that. We had a real good time informing people. And I think that's my catharsis. When I can't stand the propaganda anymore, I just go out in the street and start screaming.
Yeah,
people,
and
many people come up and take information pamphlets. Anybody can do it. It just takes getting up off your seat, going out, telling people the truth. And people will slowly start waking up. More and more of us are.
The only thing I can do to stop the screaming, RB, is to crack open another bottle of Cabernet and sit back and watch the squirrels behind the house.
I just have a talk with my BC bud, and we're fine.
I hear you. RB, thanks for checking in, pal.
All right,
take care. Don't be a stranger. Ashanda is LaShonda is calling from Austin, Texas. Hey, LaShonda.
Hey, Mike. It's been a while. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm celebrating my 32nd birthday today.
How's the baby?
Baby is fine. I had to step out. He's kind of loud, but yes, he's doing well. He'll be one on Saturday. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, happy birthday.
Yes.
To LaShonda's baby. So you're turning 32?
I am 32 as of September 11th, yes.
Oh, that's right. She told me a long time ago that was your birthday. Well, happy birthday today.
Yeah, it's not a real good birthday. I was just calling. I'm sick of it. I'm like RB, man. I'm sick of it's just like no matter where you go, it's slapping you in the face. And, you know, people, I'm gonna keep it real with you, Mike. People don't want to hear the truth.
No.
They don't want to hear it, because if they knew what the truth was, whatever it is, it would blow their mind so bad they'd be in the corner talking about naked and talking about
that's yeah, uh-huh.
They don't, and it's like, you know, here it is 6 years later and we're still talking about the new Osama video that just came out. You know, what's wrong with that picture? While, you know, today all these soldiers over there getting blew up and bombed and all these Iraqi families are just being torn apart, and you know they're sending a lot of them to Detroit now. I told you I'm originally from Detroit,
right.
And a couple weeks ago I remember reading on Yahoo News that they're going to be sending all of these refugees from Iraq to Detroit, and it's like, well, damn, you know, Detroit is already experiencing stuff as is, so now you're going to put an explosive mix, you know, because the black and Arab community are not on good terms. So here y'all going to go launching a powder keg off on that. It's just crazy.
LaShonda, my two cents, it's not going to happen. Do you know how many, I read this the other day, since the start of Bush's fun little war and occupation in Iraq, we have taken in something like under 100 Iraq refugees, people who, you know, translators for the U.S. troops, people who worked for the occupier, that's us, and those people's lives are worth 2 cents. And there have been thousands upon thousands of them, but we haven't taken them in. We're not going to take them in. So I swear I don't think the people in Detroit have to worry about an influx of Iraqi immigrants. It's just not going to happen. The American government under George W. Bush doesn't give a damn. They don't give a tinker's damn about the people of Iraq, whether they helped us or not. So it's LaShonda, trust me on this, is not going to happen.
You know, and the other thing is just with the whole 9/11 thing that happens, I don't know what the official story is. You don't know. It's like the greatest whodunit. You couldn't have gathered Miss Marple and Charlie Chan and all them together to come up with a greater story. And it's just like, wow, you know, man, when can we get back to what we really need to get back to? You know, trying to get the economy. Somebody need to go to jail for this housing scandal. It's just a mess. And the last thing I'm going to say, because I know you got a lot of people who want to get on, but put it like this. Whether or not Jesus come back like people think he is, that's it for America, man. That's it. We just done fell off something terrible. And I hate it.
I hear you. LaShonda, thanks. Happy birthday. Take care of the baby. We'll talk again.
All right, Mike. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
But I know that this is a different type of enemy than we're used to. It's an enemy that likes to hide and burrow in.
You know what LaShonda was saying about we don't want to know the truth. I'm reminded of Jack Nicholson's character in A Few Good Men, Colonel Jessup, when he was on the stand right as he breaks. He says, you know, he screams, you can't handle the truth. Of course, he was saying it in a different context, but I believe that. I really do. For the most part, we Americans couldn't handle the truth. It's all we can do to hear that there's something called Guantanamo where people are being tortured, but when that is tamped down with the anti-Muslim attitude that is prevalent out there. And a lot of the anti-Muslim attitude, I have to say, at least in Europe, is they bring it on themselves with this fundamentalist religious nonsense. I've said before, I'm not apologizing for any fundamentalists. I don't care if they're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, makes no difference to me. You're all crazy, just crazier than hell, and I wish you all would just rapture off someplace and go live on a different planet. But the Bush crime family is a blanket. Their propaganda is for blanket hatred. Even secular Muslims or non-crazed religious Muslims. You know, there are secular Jews. There are I don't know. Are there secular Christians? No, don't push that too far, Malloy. You're going to get lost. Maybe they're only secular Jews. But as far as the Muslim population is concerned, that we read about, you know, these crazy people who leave their own sick, twisted countries and go to Europe and then decide, well, let's blow up England. Oh, I know, let's murder people on the streets in Sweden. Oh, no, I got a better idea. Let's blow up churches in Germany. You know, screw you people. I hate this. This is just, I hate them as much as I hate the Christian fundamentalists, as much as I hate these screaming Jewish fundamentalists who are living on someone else's land, and when the Israeli Defense Forces finally move in to move them out, you know, they scream like three-year-old banshees. What's wrong with these people? Crazy, crazy, crazy. And a Petraeus' own book. Who sent me this? Pray too. Mike, General Petraeus' book says 10 to 15 years to overcome an insurgency. If you can clear and hold a significant part of the country, and if you can continue to expand the territory you hold, and if the general the civilian population is willing to be occupied, and if the insurgents are a small minority of the population, 10 to 15 years. Now, none of those conditions hold in the situation we're in Iraq. None. So Petraeus sits there, and he says he can't answer. The hell he can't! Why didn't somebody quote his own book right back at him and say, well, when you wrote this, were you serious or not serious? And Bruce writes, Mike, notice how none of the senators asked the general why we're building 14 permanent bases. Yeah, we just touched on that, didn't we? Back to your phone calls here. Matthew's calling from Bedford, Texas. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Hey, it's going all right.
I almost had a religious experience this morning. I was...
Well, thank God it was almost.
Oh. Well,
all right, what happened?
I was listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. I have my alarm clock set to it, and I was actually listening to the same thing you were, the rebroadcast of the coverage of September 11th, and I had just woken up, and I just started listening to it. I just kept listening, and I just started noticing that as this went on, at first I thought it was almost a dream, that I was reliving it, and I almost wanted to keep sleeping, see if I could go back one more day. But then I just kept listening to it, and I'm 18, and I just started feeling this small pain growing in my chest.
That's called a heart attack.
Well, but
only when you're my age, then it's called a heart attack. In your case, it's probably stress.
Yeah, well, I almost started thinking it was heartbreak because it was kind of that feeling, and then I just kept listening. And finally, I just noticed, man, I'm trembling. I'm having difficulty breathing, and I can't do it. And I turned it off, and I turned one of those other more close range radios, and I turned it on, and just starting at that moment, I heard opening notes to a song. I was like, oh my God, is this The Who? And I kept listening to it. I was like, yes, this is The Who, but this song, and then the lyrics, I know you've deceived me. Now here's a surprise. I was like, my God.
I can see for miles and miles.
And I'm like, this is almost religious. And it was almost therapeutic, too, because after that it was John Lennon. And I was like, oh, my God. I was just kind of in awe because after hearing this horrible, I mean, just painful, painful, painful day rebroadcast. I mean, I don't care what people, you know, believe happened. A lot of people know my position, but it was a painful day. And just going through it again, and I mean, I had family who, you know, went through it more personally. And just having the, almost getting choked up here, but having that play, having I Can See for Miles play after that, I'm thinking, you know, that there has got to be something that's going to happen to the people, the Republicans, the Bushites, who are one of these days it's going to happen. What we believe in is what we as Democrats, or at least as liberals, I'm getting tired of the Democrats, but what we as liberals believe in, it's gonna come back. And you know, the people who are defending death, slaughter.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it's gonna do, Matthew, because we're out of time. It's gonna come back and bite them on the ass. Only it's gonna take off more than their ass. It's going to absolutely destroy them. Matthew, thank you. I'm glad your religious experience had to do with the WHO. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason is pleading with his feuding bandmates David Gilmour and Roger Waters to patch up their differences, for God's sake, because he, Nick, wants the group to continue touring in order to keep the band at the forefront of the industry. Yeah, well, thanks, Jack. Makes sense to me. Can you imagine, that's not an example, but can you imagine what we would be talking about if 9/11 hadn't occurred? Or if the response to 9/11 had been an international police effort to track down the perpetrators? If the perpetrators were... Well, you know. Can you imagine what we'd be talking about if there was no war, no occupation, none of this craziness, if the economy was just doing what the economy has done for 70 years until Bush came into power? Can you imagine what we'd be talking about? We'd be talking about Nick Mason and David Gilmour and Roger Waters trying to get the band back together, among other. I'd be talking about that. Sure, why not? I mean, it wouldn't be the focus of the program, but I'm a big Floyd fan, so, I'd be talking about that. Can you imagine if there was no Rush Limbaugh and hadn't been for the past 15 years, or no Sean Hannity for the past 8 or 9, none of this garbage out there, none of the lies. Imagine if there was no Fox Noise Network. Imagine if all the liars and the deceivers and the purveyors of disinformation and misinformation just didn't exist. Imagine what we'd be talking about. Wow. It staggers the imagination, doesn't it? Back to your phone calls. Rhonda is calling from San Francisco. Rhonda, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, wow, I sure miss you. Taping.
It's awful.
You know, what's this, the Crocker, what's his first name?
Ryan.
So you know how they call, what is his name, General Betrayer?
Yeah, but
I have one for Crocker, but I can't say it on the radio.
No, I wouldn't think you could.
But I always think it when I was listening to him.
Yeah, well, I've seen it in print, and
no. I won't say it. Yes, I know.
Okay.
I'm a big Stern fan too, so I still know how to hold my tongue.
Howard can say it because he's on Sirius
exclusively,
and our program is only carried by Sirius.
Yeah.
So there's a difference.
Yeah. No, I know.
Okay.
I won't say it on the radio.
Okay.
But, you know, I was calling, and I was thinking what I had to say is not all that important, but I'll say it anyway. I hope you'll put up with me.
Sure.
You said something yesterday about how this is going to be a prolonged war. It's going to go on for years and years and years. And I was thinking that, you know, the majority of the American people, I think it's 70% now, who are against the war.
Right.
But in all honesty, they're really not against it because of our people being killed, mm-hmm. or the Iraqis being killed. It's just because we're losing.
Yeah,
there's a small percentage, and I'm proud to say I'm part of that, who was out in the streets before Afghanistan, protesting against this war. The Ko-Pink people, those people who get in the galleys, but it's a very small percentage. You, people who, are against the war because it's morally wrong to wage war. And I think of the candidates running, mm. to me the best one is Denis Kucinich.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about peace. Nobody's talking about peace. And I know it sounds all hippy-dippy, love, hippy-dippy, peace and love and understanding. But, it's unfortunate because this country, our leaders, quote-unquote, our elected officials who that's what Bush is. He's an elected official. He's not God.
Yeah.
And we relate to him as if, he's, the chief muckety-muck. But they're not about peace. They're about capital and in order to amass their capital, they get the votes that they need based on this Christian fundamentalism appealing to that base,
mm-hmm.
that base of idiots who are, I'm not sure that there's a heaven. So you better live your life here now well and do well here now and be kind now while you're here, because you don't know for sure, if there's anything after this. And if you're a religious person,
mm-hmm.
You can't be sure of that. But, it's not a peace thing. Americans aren't against this war because it's wrong. They're against it because we're losing, whatever that means. Whose advantage is it? Let me tell you something. We are winning because I have stock, Mike,
mm-hmm.
that I inherited. And I found out, I never paid any attention to it, but it's tied up in a defense company.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't believe. Now I've got a tiny sliver compared to the pie that some of the other people have. And you wouldn't believe how much money I make. So I can only imagine somebody who's got chunks of this stock, what they're making on this war. I'm sitting, your mortgages are going, are going down the toilet,
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that kind of stock. I got defense stock. And I'll be honest with you, I'm against the war, but I sit there, conflicted, seeing this thing grow. And I'm like going, oh gosh, should I sell it or not? Who knows? It's my money anyway. It's the money I pay in taxes.
I hear you.
So, Mike, I really miss you. I won't hear this call until later tonight. I do listen to you still because I'm a night bird. But, they really screwed up with the programming here. They got you on 11 to 2 a.m., 11 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah.
They put Randy Rose on in the time that you are. Cool. Mm-hmm. I could dig that. But instead of putting you on 9 to midnight, they put on Rachel Maddow.
Mm-hmm.
Who's okay, but let me see. Let me tell you, she's no you. So anyway, sometimes you get some of my nerves. Whereas you always make me laugh and make me think, which is what I need.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Rhonda. And listen, thank you very much for checking in today.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay? I'll hear what I said tonight.
There you go.
Okay, bye bye.
Take care. Rhonda really is onto something with the. The idea that a lot of Americans are just pissed off because we're not, quote, winning this war, end quote. This was not a war to begin with. It was not a war. This was a resource grab and the overthrow of a leader in another country who was an absolute bastard, but that we just didn't like him and knew this would be easy in terms of the overthrow. The people who planned this war, the Bush crime family, what they did not understand, even though people were telling them, everybody from the Israeli intelligence agencies to people in this country who understood Middle East affairs and international relations to people in Europe, intelligence agencies were trying to explain to these psychopathic bastards that run this country now, you can't go into Iraq and do what you're planning on doing without destabilizing the entire region and getting yourself caught in a situation that you will not get out of for 8, 9, 10 years, if then. But the Bush crime family, they operate outside the law, outside the realm of reason, outside logic, outside morality and ethics, and said, nah, we're going to go ahead and do it.
Make no mistake about it, this nation is sad. But we're also tough and resolute. And now's an opportunity to do generations a favor by coming together and whipping terrorism, hunting it down, finding it, and holding them accountable.
Sounds like he's a roach exterminator for Orkin or something. Where you just, you know, walk around the outside of the house with the canister on your back squirting stuff. Jesus. Whipping terrorism. Seth writes in the subject line regarding what I said about imagine if 9/11 had never happened. And Seth adds if President Gore was duly sworn in. Yeah, if Gore would have been president, it never would have happened. That's an impossible statement because it's an impossible statement, but I believe it. And this from Donald in Augusta, Georgia. Mike, don't you think the great general's microphone not working was apropos when he started out in the House yesterday? Clearly he didn't have a damn thing to say of consequence. The Democrats, and by this I mean Hillary Clinton, really stuck her foot in it by proclaiming the surge has worked. Isn't that just like most Democrats giving in to Bush before the facts are on the table? Let's see. Bush fired every general he had to get to this butt-kissing toady, and somehow the Democrats have managed to make this guy the best general in American history. Now they and we are stuck with having to give Bush more and more war. He kicks ass every time because there are the Democrats are so damn stupid. Can someone please explain to me why Hillary Clinton is the preferred candidate of most Democrats? Once again, she tried to get out ahead of the Iraq war and tried to steal some glory for herself and got bit on the rear end when the truth about Petraeus was revealed and the fact that the White House was writing the Iraq report. Kind of explains why this party is in deep doo-doo, huh? These idiots are outmanned by a twit like Bush. My, how the mighty have fallen. Donald and Augusta. And then this from the Times of the UK online. American forces are paying Sunni insurgents hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash to switch sides and help them to defeat al-Qaeda in Iraq. The tactic has boosted the efforts of American forces to restore some order to war-torn provinces around Baghdad. In the run-up to the report by General Davis Petraeus over the past couple of days, Petraeus has told Congress that there has been great progress at a local level in Iraq following a surge in the number of troops this year, but little sign of political reconciliation. In a letter to U.S. troops, the general wrote that, quote, local Iraqi leaders are coming forward, exposing extremists and establishing provisional units of neighborhood security volunteers, end quote. Well, yeah, if they're being paid, The Sunday Times of London has witnessed firsthand the enormous sums of cash changing hands. One sheikh in a town south of Baghdad was given $38,000 and promised a further $189,000 over 3 months to drive al-Qaeda fighters from a nearby camp. Petraeus will ask Congress, or has asked Congress, for more time to build political reconciliation. Yada, 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 yada. So, yeah, I've been curious as to why the Sunnis had decided in several instances to switch sides and fight with the Americans, you know, especially since it was the Americans who, in the person of the killer, John Negroponte, who went to Iraq 18 months, 2 years ago, and trained Shia executioners how to run death squads against the Sunnis. So when I started reading a couple of weeks ago that the Sunnis in certain areas were switching from being insurgents to helping the occupier, that's us, against al-Qaeda, which is I don't know who, I thought, man, something stinks. Well, there you go. It's, you know, enough money. You know how those Middle Eastern Arabs are, right? Huh? Enough money? Hell, they'll slit the throat of their own mothers. Right? Right. Back to your phone calls. Will is calling from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Will.
Hey, Mike. I want to start out by asking you to go into the next break with a polka because I'm so pissed off. I need to get up and dance to burn off some of this rage.
What's got stuck in your craw tonight, Will?
I was listening to Crocker,
yeah.
When he said that the government of Iraq is dysfunctional, I was struck with the irony of that statement, given the fact that he made that statement in a hearing held by a dysfunctional government.
Yeah, well, we don't have time to get the polka, but maybe later in the show. Hold on a second, Will. I got a break here. We'll come back right after the break.
All right.
I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us.
America's united. The freedom-loving nations of the world stand by our side. This will be a monumental struggle of good versus evil, but good will prevail.
Unbelievable. You know, all the years during the Troubles between the Irish Republican Army and the British military, it was never referred to as a struggle between good and evil. It was seen for what it was, a murderous occupation to which the response was more murder and killing. I try to sit here and think, how many times have events that have killed civilians in a country been referred to as a struggle between good and evil in addressing the people who caused the bombs to go off or the attack to occur? We were talking with Will in Michigan, so let's go back to Will. Where were we, Will?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for holding me over through the break.
Sure.
I had a little chance to calm down a bit. But Rhonda made a mistake when she said that Bush was elected. He wasn't elected.
Well, no, and I think she, I think she understood that.
I was at a 9/11 memorial vigil today, and I watched the we were about a block away from a recruiting station, and I watched the recruiters go in the back of their little storefront space there, and they were in uniform when they went in the back, and they were in civilian clothes when they came out, and they came over to a twice wounded Vietnam veteran who was sitting in a motorized wheelchair holding flying an American flag upside down, and they confronted him on you know, the improper display of the flag, and he said there's nothing improper about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this country is in distress, and flying the flag upside down is a legal distress signal. It's in the U.S. code. And I think everybody who thinks this country is in deep doo-doo should be flying their flag upside down.
Yeah, that's true. I think so too. But when you stop and think about it, other than carrying a flag in a parade or a pro or anti-war demonstration, who flies a flag anymore?
I've flown the flag for at least 20 years.
Okay, then you just answered my question. Who flies the flag anymore? I do. Fair enough.
No, I love my country, but I cannot stand this government. I will not tolerate it. I'm ready to give up the ballot box and go to the ammo box.
I hear you. All right, Will, thanks for checking in, okay?
Thanks.
All right, take care. We'll talk again. Reverend Lennox Yearwood of the Hip Hop Caucus. How many of you white folks know who he is? He wanted to attend the Petraeus hearings yesterday, so he stood in line waiting his turn to enter the hearing room. And this is what happened to him. Capitol Hill police football tackled Hip Hop Caucus preacher Reverend Lennox Yearwood, who is in line to enter the hearing room for General Petraeus' testimony on Capitol Hill. He was attacked by six Capitol police today when he was stopped from entering the Cannon Caucus room, where General Petraeus gave testimony to a joint hearing for the House Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Relations Committee on the war in Iraq. After waiting in line throughout the morning for the hearing that was scheduled to start at 12:30 p.m., Reverend Yearwood was stopped from entering the room while others behind him were allowed to enter. He told the officers blocking his ability to enter the room that he was waiting in line with everyone else and had the right to enter as well. When they threatened him with arrest, he responded with, "I will not be arrested today." According to witnesses, six Capitol Police, without warning, tackled him. He was carried off in a wheelchair by D.C. Fire and Emergency to George Washington Hospital. Reverend Yearwood was examined for possible head and leg injuries, then transferred to central processing. He has been charged with assaulting a police officer. Reverend Yearwood said he was being released from the hospital to be taken to central booking. He said, quote, "The officers decided I was not going to get in General Petraeus' hearing when they saw my button, which says, 'I love the people of Iraq.'" And here's an update from about the story. Liz from Hip Hop Caucus is at court and can't get online, but wanted to let people know that Reverend Yearwood has a broken leg. He's in a cast, and he's being arraigned for assaulting an officer and disorderly conduct. Wow. Jeff is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going? I wanted to comment on that soundbite that you had with Lindsey Graham talking to Petraeus.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if anybody in Senator Graham's offices is rich enough to afford a calculator. And I'm wondering what fantasy land he's living in, and you know, coming up with this number of 60 dead soldiers a month. I'd like to know when the last month we lost 60.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I punched in, I'm looking at my paper today that has a number of 3,772 dead, and, you know, you punch that into a calculator, that's coming up to 90 a month, not 60.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're losing, I mean, over you know, 90 soldiers a month. And, you know, if we continue on that pace, and I don't see any reason why the pace would slow down, you know, I mean, that's a whole lot more, you know, soldiers between now and, you know, this, you know, June or July, you know, pullout of our surge troops.
You know, Petraeus, like General William Westmoreland a generation ago, impresses me as someone who, unlike other commanders, really doesn't care about life or death of his soldiers. He works for an administration. He's always talking about the chain of command. He works for an administration that doesn't care about life or death. And being part of that, I'm guessing that Petraeus doesn't either. Traditionally, field commanders and even up the chain all the way to the top field commander usually care about their soldiers. This guy doesn't. He doesn't give a damn. He doesn't give a damn about anything. It's all about him. It's all about his counterinsurgency booklet that lays out a list of rules of which he's violating them all. His attitude, the cavalier attitude about people dying from this guy is typical of people in the Bush crime family. So I don't believe that General Petraeus cares a damn thing about how many people die. So the number 60 to him is that. It's a number. Instead of sitting there advocating, like so many of these generals who are no longer in power because they did advocate a certain conduct of this invasion and occupation, or the ones who advocated against it, who are no longer in any kind of power or position in the chain of command. Why didn't Petraeus walk into this hearing with that little twit Crocker to his left and sit there and say, Senators, let me tell you something. This is a mess. And I'm going to tell you right now, you keep my ass there, we're going to be there for the next 15 years. I'm serious. I got my 4-star. You can't take it away from me. Not unless I do something real bad. So let me give you some hard truth. We're screwed. We're stuck. We're in this. We never should have come. I'm a military man. I'm not a toady suck-up to George W. Bush, even though I sound like one. We are in a hell of a situation, and we cannot get out. There. Now. Ask me your questions.
That, unfortunately, I don't see any generals that would ever say that, unfortunately.
None that are alive or none that are in uniform. You got that right. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Now, can you imagine what would happen if people started speaking the truth? Whether it was Lindsey Graham, who used to be in the Judge Advocate General's office, that was his military service, or Hillary Clinton, or Obama. You notice, other than Graham, I'm not going to mention Republicans. Republicans are vermin. They're scum. They're crud. These candidates wouldn't know truth if it came up and bit their asses off. You take a look at Mitt Romney. Oh, never mind. Don't look at Mitt Romney. You'll get sick. All of the Giuliani, what a twit. What 9/11 was all about him. But if any of these people ever drop the facade, the pretense, the political nonsense, the garbage, the BS, and just sat there and said, listen, I want an answer, and I want it straight. And if the generals sit there and say, you're going to get a straight answer, we are screwed. We'll be right back. It's about 9:30 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program from our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. He also answered your calls. Billy Foster, our chat room moderator. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Back to your phone calls. Karen in Ventura, California.
Hi. If General Petraeus had told the truth over the past couple of days about what's really happening, our troops would be coming home right now.
Yeah.
My anti-war group met this evening in front of our government center in protest of the occupation of Iraq. I took the early shift, and I was home in time to listen to your sound clips of the senators who asked questions of Petraeus and Crocker today, mm-hmm. and that was really good for me because as we were holding up our signs, we were also discussing the topic of our next meeting, which will be about the Petraeus testimony and how the success in Iraq is defined by the Bush administration and where the anti-war movement is headed from here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get home, turn you on, you've got all those great sound clips, all the questions that were asked and the responses. Can I use your sound clips on Sunday?
Oh, sure, go right ahead.
Okay, that will help me a lot.
Anything,
and it'll be a lot more exciting than me just saying it. So
anything you hear on this program is yours.
Oh, that is fantastic. But the reason I really did call was about a report you did on the study done by Media Curves.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. The question was, do you believe that the military objectives of the surge troop increasement ordered by President Bush early this year in Iraq have been met?
Right.
Now, the results of the study showed that after hearing the testimony of General Petraeus, Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike believe that the surge did do what it was supposed to do.
Right.
While before
that's
they heard Petraeus, it was just the opposite.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about, Karen. We went over that.
Yes,
whole...
I try to stay on topic.
Yeah. That's...
But you know what the results of this study tells me? Is that propaganda works, and that because of the content of the Petraeus testimony, anti-war groups are going to have to work even harder.
Well, there's something else that it should tell us, and that is you put somebody in a uniform on camera and put behind him all the props of other people in uniforms, junior rank officers like majors and colonels, and the American people get all dewy-eyed and weak-kneed. If you'll remember during the Iran-Contra hearings, as soon as they trotted out the traitorous Oliver North, lieutenant colonel in his uniform, the members of Congress got all, weak-kneed and twisty-eyed to the point where they couldn't ask him tough questions. That's the only reason Petraeus, who is a military field commander, he is not supposed to answer those questions. That's up to the commander-in-chief and the people planning the war.
Right. The commander-in-chief does not want to take the responsibility.
Generals are to fulfill the policies put together by the civilians. They are not to be called into Congress to answer these asinine questions. But this is just another example of the Bush crime family's craziness.
Exactly.
It
well,
never
thanks
stops.
Thanks for being here, Mike. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Karen. I appreciate you
Bye-bye.
Checking in. All right. Take care. Earl is calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Earl. I got about a minute here, pal.
Yeah, Mike. I'll make it really quick. I'm glad to hear you back on XM. Anyhow, I was wondering if you heard about Judy Miller's new gig.
No, the former New York Times CIA operative. What does she do now?
Right. Well, you know, in the Financial Times today, it says that, you know, she's long suspected of being a closet neocon. Well, it's been confirmed she's joined up with the neoconservative Manhattan Institute. It's a neocon think tank.
Really?
If I didn't value walking around a free man, I would do the right thing as far as Miss Miller's concerned.
Now, be careful. Be careful.
I enjoy being a free man. Don't worry. I better never hear the words that I have a terminal illness.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy your show. I'm glad to hear you back on XM, Mike.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I hope to hear from you again. Earl, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Charles is calling from Connecticut, listening on the Internet. Charles, got a few seconds here. Go for it, pal.
I didn't think
hit on.
I didn't think you would either, but here you are.
Yeah, well, here I am. Decades ago, and you can go back definitely to what I think Molly Ivins had said about the Reagan Revolution, that it was to make it okay to hate.
Yeah.
The Republicans and the war supporters have been so successful in growing the hate.
No, haven't they?
That they have to be very careful because they may get what they want. Because I honestly believe that the public is ready and willing to hear that the story that they have been told for 6 years is not true.
I think you're probably right, Charles, and I have to leave it there, pal. We want to close the program tonight with just a bit of recognition. I know we've had it all day long, but a bit of recognition for the people who died on September 11th, 2001, and the people who are going yet to die because of what they were exposed to on that day, amid all the lies and deceptions and venality of the Bush crime family. So we're going to leave you with this. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.